I want to take a minute to talk to parents, because this is something I didn't fully appreciate until recently. Myopia, or nearsightedness, is showing up earlier and earlier in kids. And I've learned it's about more than just seeing clearly in class. If myopia progresses over time without being addressed, it can lead to bigger vision challenges down the road. That's why I'm glad conversations around children's eye health are changing. When you take your child to an eye doctor, you're not just getting a prescription. You're getting insight into how their eyes are developing and what options might help support them in the long term. One of those options is Essilor Stellest lenses. They're designed specifically for kids and used as part of a myopia management approach, all while still correcting everyday vision. And from what I understand, they're worn just like regular glasses, nothing complicated for kids or parents. Every child is different, so the best place to start is with a comprehensive eye exam. For me, it's about being proactive now to help protect their vision for the future. Visit Essilor.com to learn more about Stellest lenses and to find an Essilor expert eye care professional near you. That's Essilor.com.
And at this point, I'm usually like, I'm all up for whatever Dan wants to try. I'll film Dan do anything, but this was the one time I was like, Dan, don't do it.
Welcome, MythFits.
Welcome back, MythFits. You guys are in for a treat today. We have some amazing guests on. But before we get into that, Carrie, one of the defining aspects of MythBusters were the high-speed shots, those slow-motion shots of experiments that we had no idea. Like when you see it real time, you don't see exactly what happens in that event. But once we found a high-speed camera, you could dissect each moment of the event. It was one of those moments on the show that was like, oh my gosh, we've found this amazing equipment.
Yeah, I mean, it was more than just a camera shot. You know, first of all, the only way you can see an explosion is if you played it back in slow-mo. wink, wink, we might have the slow-mo guys on later. But we also got to use it as a tool. Anytime that we needed to figure out a speed velocity or just, you know, what is the terminal velocity of something, we had, you know, we'd put up these big rulers, we use a high-speed camera, and we do all our calculations off of that and get our data. But it really defined the show. Like, I feel like every single episode, we had some sort of really great slow-mo shot. Some of my favorites were not even like the big explosions, but like the small things we did. I mean, I loved seeing a wave propagate off of like C4 destroying something.
Yeah.
But I also liked it when we just did the little things.
It was like explosions came first and then the high speed came second, because one of our first big explosions, we didn't even catch it on high speed. And that's when we were testing the cement truck. And it was like, what? We missed that shot? To that time, that was the biggest explosion we had done on MythBusters.
The way that we filmed those, you know, you'd have to trigger after the explosion would happen because it would be constantly filming, and then the action would happen. Then you'd push the button and it would just capture the first few seconds, because it couldn't store all of the data. It couldn't store right. Every single frame. So we had to be ready for it. And the shockwave hit our cameraman, knocked him back a little bit. And he didn't realize that was going to happen. So he didn't hit the button fast enough. And so our very first slow-mo shot was actually not with the big fancy camera that we had. That was so sad. I know that he was probably devastated that he did not get to get that shot.
I remember Jamie and Adam, I think they did 20,000 pounds of ampho. It was the myth was if somebody during World War I or World War II fell out of a plane and a bomb exploded beneath them, and that shockwave actually cushioned their fall and they survived falling from the plane. And I remember after seeing that high-speed shot, we all kind of were just in awe of it, because it was the first time we saw the shockwave. It's like it was this bubble that pushed all the air away from the explosion before the actual event happened. And it looked fake. It looked like computer generated. Like all of us were like, what in the heck was that bubble? And that was the first time we were able to see it because of the high-speed camera.
Now I think AI has made it so that we don't trust anything that we see.
Yeah, right.
But back then it was just, you know, that moment of just like, is that real? That's what really happens? That what you can actually see? But sooner or later, I feel like the production started to abuse that camera. I mean, I did not enjoy any of those high speed shots of like me trying to be athletic in any way. There are high speeds of me jumping that are wildly embarrassing. The first time I really realized I did not look like a Nike commercial when I was running is when they put the slow-mo up on me for like something we were doing on a treadmill. I think it was The Smell of Fear when they had to take a sample of non-fear sweat. And they're like, okay, guys, run. And I'm just like, the faces I make when I run and that whole slow-mo. And then they put it on the air.
Oh,
everybody can see how goofy I look when I'm trying to run.
Well, do you remember that time we went down to like a junior college in South San Francisco, and I forget what the myth was for, but we were trying to
long jump,
and your high speed shot of you long jumping was one of the funniest shots. I hope we can pull that up because it was just like, oh my God. That was so good. I could watch that over and over.
I mean, I believe that on Instagram somewhere there is a high speed of me standing on top of the earthquake machine, just giggling, not realizing that.
Oh, right.
This would become a meme.
You didn't calculate that.
I did not. I just was up there laughing like a goofball.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize what was going to happen if I stood on an earthquake machine.
You guys were standing on it, too.
Oh, my God. You're so full of it.
Oh, please.
I was doing this show called The Explosion Show, and we were blowing up stuff every day, like sometimes twice a day. We had this one camera operator who said that he could also operate the high-speed camera. Now, that doesn't always translate. Like, a videographer sometimes doesn't understand the high-speed camera. We missed like 75% of the explosions.
What?
The only reason we were able to save the show is because we were doing it at New Mexico Tech and they had their own high-speed cameras. So they were our backup, but like our camera guy kept missing the shots. And it was like, why is he in charge of shooting the high-speed shot? Like, put anybody else on. Like, this is unacceptable. It was so bad. But thankfully, New Mexico Tech was there and they were like, don't worry, we got multiple angles. It wasn't as good resolution, but it was just like, dude, this show is all about catching slow motion explosions. We're not going to have anything to show if you keep missing them.
You can't lie on your resume for a specialized skill like that. That's crazy. Oh my God. Well, you know, New Mexico Tech was one of those places. They even had high speed cameras on drones. Like, they were doing explosions so often and doing so many crazy things. I mean, they have a jet sled. You got to get, that is the most beautiful high speed, is when we were using the jet sled to compact a car. And it was just a giant steel plate racing down the sled, you know, jet propelled and into a wall and just squished the car. And it just went from a car to slow motion dust into nothing. And it was that was one of my favorite high speeds of the whole show.
You know what? That reminded me of another one we tested, but this was for snowplow. So the myth was a car crashes into a snowplow and splits right down the middle. We tested it multiple times. We couldn't get it to split. So then we finally took it to New Mexico, put it on their rocket sled. We built this giant like axe blade. And so that axe blade went down the track and we had this car on these cinder blocks and it just sliced perfectly right down the middle, like knife through butter. I mean, it was one of those, like, what am I looking at right now? The two car halves just split perfectly. It was just one of those epic shots on MythBusters.
I mean, explosions and fire and ignition are so beautiful. Like, I love all of the twisting fire. But when it came down to it, the crunching of demolition, like cars crashing, was so cool to see because there were so many details to pay attention to in every little area. You know, like watching one giant semi hit another and seeing little pieces fly off in every direction and what's actually going to happen. I loved the crash test kind of slow motions that we got to do.
You know, another favorite slow motion shot was when we were testing that from the movie Red, I think it was. It was a bullet versus a RPG.
Yeah.
And again, the brilliant minds over at New Mexico Tech, they were able to figure out a way to have a bullet and an RPG strike head on at the same exact time, right in the frame of the shot. And we have a high speed shot of a bullet hitting the head of the RPG. It was like, how did you do this? How did you figure it out? And how did you capture it? And, you know, it made us look awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I guess when you have like all the explosive range, 40 by 40 miles of explosive range, and scientific minds all coming together just for our goofy show, magic. That was brilliant. Van Romero and that whole team were just so great.
The thing that I loved about a lot of our high speed shots is it would reveal something that there's no way you could ever see. For example, we shot an RPG, a rocket propelled grenade. And if you watch in the movies, they're like, and then they hit something and then it explodes. That's not how they work.
Yeah.
And we saw firsthand, we shot a trailer, like a little yellow trailer with an RPG. The RPG goes through the trailer and the fins of the RPG left a perfect outline in the side of the trailer. And then the explosive shot, and you see this like laser shoot out of the RPG. So it's not like an explosion. It's designed to puncture armor. And so what it does is it just spews out molten copper that penetrates armor. So it's like, it's not like Hollywood at all. And I remember thinking, God, that was so much cooler than, you know, just the ridiculous rockets that you see launched in Hollywood movies.
Yeah, it's not like it triggers like a bullet. It triggers in the air. It's so cool, so different. And I don't think I would have ever truly understood that until we got that really great slow motion.
What was your favorite high-speed shot from Mythbusters?
That is tough. I mean, I always loved it when we had some sort of propellant, like creamer cannon, like the burning sugar cloud that kind of went through the air and turned black. It's like the closest thing I could imagine to seeing the A-bomb go off, but, you know, creamer. And I thought that was beautiful because first you see all of the creamer blown into the air by that giant air cannon. And then once it's already a cloud in the sky, there was a lit flare that ignited the creamer.
Yeah.
And it started at the top on fire. And then as it's clouding up into a mushroom, then it starts to ignite down below. And you can see it slowly just go whoosh, and then keep kind of twirling and just getting bigger and bigger till it's just a devil cloud in the sky.
The high speed
is how I experienced it from the ground. But it went so fast in real life that if you didn't have that adrenaline rushing through you, you might not have visualized it in high speed. But yeah,
right.
Slow motion cloud coming at us was just as scary when we watched it back as it was in the moment.
Yeah, because it happens so fast that your adrenaline is pumping that it doesn't register. And it's not until you look at the high speed that you're like, whoa, that was such an amazing event.
What about you? What was your favorite?
I think one of my favorites was Adam getting slapped, just because Jamie nailed it so perfectly, like just perfect hand on the face, and his lower jaw went in one direction and his head followed back and his skin was just flapping all over. It different than the one when you slapped me.
Man, I feel like I failed on this one. Like my slap was like...
I know you're
one
you
out
just,
of 10. Adams was a 10. Adams
yours were
was
like
a 10.
Fingers. Yours just, it was like fingers. There was no like palm slap, no connection.
Jamie's a much better slapper. He must do it a lot more often.
I'm going to give you a 6. I'll give Jamie a 10.
I feel like that was a generous 6 right there. Generous.
5.5.
Yeah, maybe still generous. Anyway,
that's why I'm so excited to talk to our guests today, because when we were doing high speed, it was like old technology. The cameras were finicky. It took forever to download the shot. Now the slow-mo guys who are going to be coming on the podcast, they have state-of-the-art technology, and they're just hilarious guys. And their videos, if you guys haven't seen them, I'm sure you have. Their videos are some of the most spectacular videos on YouTube.
Yeah, I think, you know, we were starting out in 2003, so early 2000s technology is what we were working with. These guys were also on the cutting edge of content creation for YouTube. Like, it was really early on. They have gotten an audience of almost 15 million, or is it over 15 million people? Like, that is crazy. Some of their videos have just gone completely viral. And so, like, actually being in this space at that time and finding that niche is so freaking cool. I would love to hear about their entire journey and what inspired them to go into this. I mean, I don't think it was their first viral video. I think I came later. I really love the one where they had set up, it looked like hundreds of little mouse traps
on the
top of a trampoline. So he climbs up on a ladder. It's not what you expect. You know, he launches himself into this middle of this trampoline, and there's this centrifugal reaction of mouse traps going off, but they're not going off on him. I thought he was going to stand up and there'd be one on his nose and his ear and all over his clothes. But there was just like one, I think, that attached to his hair, and he was 100% okay.
Yeah.
Tori Belay-cheated it.
So don't go away. We have Gav and Dan from the Slow Mo Guys coming up next.
And don't forget, at the end of the show, we always answer an audience question, and it usually goes really strangely. So if you are a true MythFit, stick around to the end and also submit your questions. We might answer them on air. Okay, Tori, I got to tell you, I'm a little exhausted right now. I'm a little under the weather. And the idea that I have to get up and go cook dinner right now, I'm a little uninspired. I mean, I need your help.
Well, you are in luck because one of our sponsors is Factor. Factor makes it easy with fully prepared meals designed by dietitians and crafted by chefs. So you can eat well without the shopping or cooking.
I am so excited to just go to my fridge right now and pull a meal out. That's like, that is going to make so much of my night so much more efficient, because all I really want to do is go watch Stranger Things.
And you know what's great about it, Carrie? There's no refined sugars, no artificial sweeteners, no refined seed oils. And Carrie, these meals, they fit your goals and schedule. Healthier eating, calorie management, more protein.
So with Factor, you get 100 rotating weekly meals so you don't get bored. Options include high protein, calorie smart, Mediterranean diet, GLP-1 support, and ready-to-eat salads. Plus, the new Muscle Pro collection supports strength and recovery.
Let's go!
Now that I'm going to the gym a lot more, I mean, not today because I've got a cold, but now that I'm going to the gym more, I feel like I need some of those protein meals.
And it's so convenient. Always fresh, never frozen, ready in about 2 minutes. No prep, no stress.
Head to factormeals.com/MythFits50off and use code MythFits50off to get 50% off your first Factor box plus free breakfast for a year.
Offer only valid for new Factor customers with code and qualifying auto-renewing subscription purchase. Make healthier eating easy with Factor.
I want to take a minute to talk to parents because this is something I didn't fully appreciate until recently. Myopia, or nearsightedness, is showing up earlier and earlier in kids. And I've learned it's about more than just seeing clearly in class. If myopia progresses over time without being addressed, it can lead to bigger vision challenges down the road. That's why I'm glad conversations around children's eye health are changing. When you take your child to an eye doctor, you're not just getting a prescription. You're getting insight into how their eyes are developing and what options might help support them in the long term. One of those options is Essilor Stellest lenses. They're designed specifically for kids and used as part of a myopia management approach, all while still correcting everyday vision. And from what I understand, they're worn just like regular glasses, nothing complicated for kids or parents. Every child is different, so the best place to start is with a comprehensive eye exam. For me, it's about being proactive now to help protect their vision for the future. Visit Essilor.com to learn more about Stellest lenses and to find an Essilor expert eye care professional near you. That's Essilor.com.
Welcome back, MythFits. Now, we have some special guests on our show. Now, if you were a fan of MythBusters, you probably already subscribed to their channel. They are Gav and Dan, the Slow Mo Guys. They have an amazing YouTube channel. Welcome, you guys. Oh my God. I'm so excited to have you on because I have been a fan of yours pretty much since you guys started.
Oh, thanks very much. Yeah, I've been a fan of Mythbusters since it was on TV, and this channel would absolutely not exist if I never watched Mythbusters.
Well, Mythbusters definitely spent some time incorporating slow motion video. I feel like it really changed. The whole game changed for us when we had our first slow-mo of an explosion. And it's hard. It's sort of like when you look at a picture of something that you remember and it's different. But with a slow motion camera on our explosion, you could see the wave propagating. You could see every little piece of fire kind of slowly filling the air. And it just, it made the entire show different. So I love that your entire channel is devoted to that beauty.
Yeah. And I love the exact same stuff. Like those shockwaves you get off an explosion just look like pure sci-fi. It doesn't look like it should be real. And I know that on Mythbusters, you had sort of like mid-2000s high-speed cameras, which I used to use in the film industry, and they were like...
crap.
So yeah, like the dynamic range was real bad, had to wait ages to download the footage. And it's been really interesting to watch people who used high-speed then see what it's like now and just be like, oh, it's so much better.
Yeah.
Like, I really enjoy showing Adam Savage, like, current high-speed cameras. He's like, unbelievable.
That's a good impression.
Yeah, you guys have really great chemistry. It's fun to watch you put these projects together and figure out the shot and like just the banter that happens when things go right and wrong. It's a really compelling channel. I mean, I know that when we first used our high-speed camera, it was the amount that you could actually capture was so little, and it was you had to push the button after the action happened and it would just record like a couple seconds beforehand. So our very first high speed shot, we missed. Like our cameraman got hit by a shockwave from an explosion. He hit the button too late and it didn't get the explosion. Like I feel like the technology must have really, really changed throughout the years for you guys. Like where are you at now with that?
I think that actually that rings very true for me. You say that the cameraman was, you know, hit by a shockwave from an explosion, then pushed the button, but he missed, right? That's a good excuse, okay? I've missed it for no good reason, especially. Just being either waiting too long, pushing it too early. And it's kind of the same now. You still have only a limited amount of time to push the button and you still capture what's just happened, or you can push the button as it's happening and it'll capture around the button. But it's pretty easy to miss.
Well, you can kind of move the trigger around based on what you think is going to happen. But for like for example, if you're just going to throw something explosive into a fire, but you don't necessarily know when it's going to blow up, it's really useful to be able to hit the trigger afterwards. But there's some stuff where you'd want to move it around. But yeah, there have been moments where I've been like thumb on the button, and then the explosion does happen, and you're kind of just like And thankfully, human reaction time is quite crap anyway, so there's always like slightly enough time. But yeah, there was a funny incident we had once where instead of using a trigger button on a cable, I just instructed Dan to hit the red button on the side of the camera because I was over here doing something. And we were using lasers. It was a green laser, so Dan had like orange goggles on. And he ran up to the camera with like 4 seconds to spare. And he was just like, they're all red. All the buttons are red.
It's like, where's the red button? Which one?
We really didn't see that coming.
You can't see the color of red.
Yeah, it was just all, I think all the buttons were orange.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And you just ended up not really pressing anything.
Yeah, I was like, is it the big one, the little one, which one?
Could I ask you a question?
Heck yeah, what you got?
If you could have a high-speed camera rolling for a Mythbusters moment where there wasn't one, what do you think it would be? Good question. I mean, I would definitely film Tori eating it off that bike.
Yeah.
On a Phantom.
How many frames a second would you need for that?
Just 1,000. Yeah. That'd be nice.
just to see the impact of my face on the concrete, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, we were innovating with cameras in weird ways that with the GoPros. Like we would put them in little shells early that they would be launched, or we just knew they were going to be destroyed after we got the shot. So if we could get slow motion in a cheaper camera that like could be destroyed after, it would be so fun to see it launched inside of things that were projecting, like inside the explosion. Because I recently did something with a flamethrower where it was I had a hose that was hooked up to a diesel tank at like 200-300 PSI, somewhere in there, and just a really gigantic flame. And the flame actually was so big as it splashed against a brick wall, it curved around me so I was inside of the flame. And all I could see was being inside the fireball. And my visual of what I saw and how beautiful the fire was could not really be captured because the only thing that they could put in there were disposable cameras and me, apparently. But if I could have had a full high speed inside there, because I'm never going to be able to explain how beautiful and crazy and weird that was on my adrenaline rush inside of a fireball. Like, I think that fire is the most beautiful thing to film on high speed. That's what I would put it inside.
I feel like a chest-mounted, really wide-angle high-speed camera would look incredible.
That would be awesome.
And, like, and fire also looks really cool from underneath when you can't see where it's coming from. It's kind of, like, bubbly, almost. It's, like, it looks like cloudy.
Yeah,
because you don't normally see that angle of fire. Yeah. So if you see it from underneath, it looks totally different. We have tried doing something with where we chucked a bunch of fuel at a glass pane, and you could see the fire sort of splashing against it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but to be on the other side of it would be like what Carrie was saying.
You know, when that question you asked, I was thinking about one of the experiments I would have loved to have a high speed shot was we were racing a car across the desert, and then we dropped a helicopter. And we were trying to see which would hit the cross, you know, the X first, the falling car or the racing car. And it was such a dangerous experiment that we had to have a 1 mile radius, you know, because they were dropping this car from a helicopter. You had to be out of the danger zone, right? And so to get that moment of the car crashing on the ground and the car driving across the X in a slow motion shot, that would have been amazing.
Beautiful.
Yeah, because it's kind of hard to get a good angle of something when you don't know exactly where it's going to land.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of dangerous, what's the most dangerous thing that you guys have ever done?
I mean, we did see you jump on a trampoline of like mouse traps. That seemed pretty freaking dangerous to me. There's all kinds of bits could be stuck in mouse traps.
We didn't get them off the side of the road. They were, you know, fresh mouse traps.
They weren't used.
They're still
they weren't used mouse traps.
And you still have appendages.
I don't think where we found them has any effect on that bit.
You can get all kinds of bits in mouse traps. And I was like, well, then
your bits?
My bits.
Not bits of mouse.
Dan just clenched up real nice.
Yeah, no. That wasn't too bad. That wasn't too bad.
But I think the most damage to you was when you were dropping in front of Tony Hawk.
Yeah, maybe. I think I was pretty damaged there. I burnt myself. I've sort of almost crushed my pelvis and broken my wrist when I did that.
Oh my God.
In front of Tony Hawk. Yeah.
Wait, okay. For people who have not seen this clip yet, can you please explain it to me?
Yeah, so we were doing a show with YouTube. We went to Tony Hawk's, got like a half pipe, which is a giant thing that skateboarders, they like to drop in on and do tricks. It's called vert skateboarding. And Tony Hawk is like the most famous skateboarder he's like the elite skateboarder of the last sort of 20 years, I suppose. And I'd always been a fan since being a kid, and he was going to do some tricks for us on our show, and he pulled off these unbelievable tricks, really cool. We filmed it in slow-mo, and at the end of the episode I was kind of like, I could give it a go dropping in. Right.
And he makes it look very easy, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah,
it looks so simple. Look at how easy it is.
Yeah. Effortless.
And at this point, I'm usually like, I'm all up for whatever Dan wants to try. I'll film Dan do anything. But this was the one time I was like, Dan, don't do it.
Look, all right. I'd done it before in a skate park at home on like a 6 foot drop, right? This was 15 feet high. And I got up there and I was looking down at Tony Hawk and Gavin and the people filming. I was like, I've got to do it. I've got to do it. When do I have another chance to do this in front of Tony Hawk? And if I pull it off, it'd be unbelievable. I did not pull it off. I pretty much just jumped off a roof, essentially, and landed
with
just
the skateboard
flat on my side. The skateboard wasn't attached to me at this point. I pretty much left it behind immediately.
Yeah. I think in the video I say we might as well have filmed you just faceplant off a roof.
Yeah, this is essentially what I did. Just dropped 15 feet. Yeah, it was that was a brutal moment.
Oh, that's so good.
But I don't regret it. Actually.
No, you would have regretted it if you didn't do it, right? If you had stepped off and went, I wussed out.
I just appreciate Dan so much in this moment because I feel like I've done some things in the past where I'm like, I might get hurt. I might get hurt here, but it might be worth it. Dan did that knowing, like, I will 100% get hurt.
Just how bad.
As long as it's like, on camera.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was it about Mythbusters that inspired you guys?
I think it was just the whole storytelling of it. Like, I really liked the fact that you could see the planning stage, you would see the build, and the stuff I liked the most was, like, the discussion around stuff that didn't work, where it's just like, okay, well, we've learned from this, and then there'd be some, like, a little bit of clashing sometimes. And just showing that all of that progress is pretty much exactly how I wanted to present the Slow-Mo Guys channel, in that we show the setup, we show the fails, and it's just a really nice progression. And then it just makes the payoff great, I think, at the end of the videos.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when we first started, most of the slow motion videos that were on YouTube, it was just some slow motion footage with some music. And we wanted to add that part. We wanted to sort of Mythbusters-ify it, if you like, by having the intro and the story behind it.
Yeah, like give the context. And
Early on, I feel like we used to kind of like turn the camera around and kind of break the fourth wall, or you know, you got to see the cameraman, or we'd kind of involve them, or they'd be in the shot. And it was by design kind of to show a little more of the authenticity. Like, this is actually happening. This is reality. This is not highly produced. Like, people get in the shots. It's fine. And I kind of missed that as we went on and we got more produced, and the network started getting more involved and kind of trying to polish everything. I just loved that sort of like dirty production of the reality of the whole process.
Just the raw stuff. Because it's always like, and I don't know if you guys ever had to recreate reactions.
Yeah.
I just hate doing it so much, where we'll like have this really natural reaction to something funny.
Yeah.
And then with the crew, they're like, hey, can you just laugh at that joke again? Yeah. And I'm just like, no.
It's so bad. It's so fake.
Yeah, and I've tried it before, and I've like, you know,
we eventually sort of had a rule where we weren't allowed to see the footage until we were ready to be filmed.
A lot of the time now, when it's just the two of us, I'm queuing up the phantom footage like this with Dan, like, don't blow it,
dude.
Yeah, I'm like, don't look yet.
Yeah,
and I'm kind of looking like squinted, so I don't notice everything.
They used to do that with us all the time. It was like, don't show them. We need their real reactions because they suck at acting.
Real's just so good. It's so hard to even. I feel like even the best actors, it's never going to beat the real first time reaction to something.
Or it's going
to
be bigger than it should be. Or, you know, in the beginning, we didn't have the money for all of the reaction cameras and stuff, and they tried to make us redo it. And they realized early on that we have to have something facing us, because that's as much of the story as how we're reacting as the actual action. So, like, because we would act completely different. If we'd already seen it, we'd be like demystified. We'd sometimes, like, you can't help but give the reaction you're supposed to have. So early on, we had to be like, no, we hate this. Real has to be actually real.
Yeah. And I feel like you guys nailed that almost the entire time. Like, the enthusiasm always seemed genuine. The whole run of Mythbusters, in my opinion.
It's 'cause we didn't know what we were doing at all.
Same.
It was real.
If there was one myth that, let's say we collaborated, if there was one myth that we could retest with your expertise, what myth would that be for you guys?
I mean, I feel like everyone always says the big old cement truck from right at the beginning. Because that was the one where the beginning was missed?
That's the one where the high-speed shot was missed, yep.
It's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a big one.
It was just completely gone.
It's a big one.
There's a cement truck, and then there's just
a dust, a cloud of dust.
We tried to recreate it with a garbage truck later, but you can't recreate the first time.
What, was it less explosives the second time?
Nope. It was just, we'd seen like 10 years of explosions by that point.
Oh, okay.
We were jaded. We were over it.
Another one.
Yeah.
And another explosions. One. Okay, so... one of the first, it's not an explosion, but I loved this high speed. Tori was getting slapped across the face, and it was by me. That was my hand for the White Rabbit project.
You love to torture me.
The torture was what, I mean, that was some sibling fun right there. But mostly, I loved watching how the skin kind of rippled, and like the full reaction of you getting slapped was such a cool shot. I would love to play that for you guys and tell me if you think that we can improve upon it.
I would love to see it. That's what's quite nice about a human face is that there's like three different speeds of material. There's like the bone that moves immediately, and then you've got like muscle, which is kind of like starts to like push out on the skin, and then the skin is just way behind. Yeah. Like you almost like a cartoon, like leaving your face a little bit.
And now that we're older, like I feel like the skin is going to move
gonna be way
in
stretchier.
A lot more fluid way. We need to recreate this, and I would let you slap me back.
If we do recreate this, you need to work on your aim, because about 10 or 15 takes, we didn't get it because she didn't actually slap me in the face. She like slapped me in the ear or in the chin. Like,
oh,
it was
goodness.
Like, just slap me in the face. Like, you're killing me right now. How many takes till we get you to just hit me in the cheek?
I don't know what it is, but as soon as you're instructed to slap someone in the face, it's always the ear. I think I've done that to you as well.
Or
I've
just
clattered your ear, like blown out your eardrum.
Oh, that's the worst.
Carrie just wants to see me get slapped in the face. I don't understand.
I love the video.
They should have the outtakes of how many times it took you to actually hit my face.
Was it actually that many?
Yeah, it was. It got to the point where I was like, I don't want to do this anymore because she can't hit my face.
I'm so sorry.
They're like, let's just do one more take. That we didn't get that one. It wasn't good enough. Oh, God. I'm having flashbacks.
Oh, yeah. It's just like teeth go first and jaw.
I feel like I got all fingers on that one. I should have another go where I get like full palm and fingers. But I was so worried about hitting him in the ear that I kind of pulled back a little bit. But God. I just, you know, I didn't have the... I didn't have like the spatial recognition to get like a really good slap. I feel like
you're
Tori,
not coordinated, is what you're trying to say.
I'm not a sporty person.
That was like the smallest flinch ever, as well. Like your eyes were closed so briefly, and like as you're being slapped, your eyes are open again. It's crazy.
Yeah,
he'd been hit so many times.
I was numb by that point.
Yeah, how did I do with the slapping itself?
Oh, we're rating the slap.
Yeah, I think I like that the fingers were smearing towards the end, like making the like a splash in the cheek.
Right.
I'd give it a, you gave it an 8?
Yeah, I feel like to get a 10, you'd have to go for a full punch.
I'm a bit stricter. I'd give it a 7.9, actually.
I give it only a 5.
Yeah, I was going to go 5. Because it's like you just got fingers. You didn't get the whole palm. We'll have to redo
full hand.
That. I would never slap you, Carrie.
I think that's the problem when we were actually shooting that. I said I would do it too, but they're like, yeah, there's still a thing on in the world that like people are okay with seeing Tori get slapped, but if he slaps me,
that's not good.
You're gonna get canceled.
That's
but
not a good
I
look.
Would give you full permission for
you
a
should
full
use
slap.
One of those little miniature hands on a stick.
Yeah.
You know,
or
like
robotic
little hands. I mean, what? That's not what I said. I didn't say a robot. Or just use a robot.
Oh, what was the slapping machine for again?
It was to slap you sober. To see, so we had a control, like, and we had a hand that was, we had like a,
it's like a rubber
barometer
hand.
Of what a hand would be. It was rubber, but it was a hard rubber. And then we once again added it to one of Grant's dangerous machines that was made for like sword swinging. So we were trying to get the right velocity and the right durometer and get a hand to slap us. But my slap wasn't as good because I kind of clinched up. I think I was too scared and ready for it. They should have slapped me so many times that I got used to it like Tori's. But like it was a fun experiment to see. So maybe the only way that you can slap me,
Tori,
is
we're just
going
to have to pull out the slapping robot. I love it. This would solve our problem. It sounds like we came up with our collab video.
We were just getting hit. Yeah, we found a way to eliminate flinching. There was one where I was throwing a football at Dan's head. And if I went like 1, 2, 3 and did it, he would always flinch. So what I would do is not count at all and then just keep almost doing it like 25 times until I felt like just letting go. And it actually worked. Like we got some good, like completely taking you by surprise
hits.
Oh my
God.
Yeah, yeah, that's the important part. Yeah. You have to not expect it. Otherwise, you will instinctively blink.
Yeah.
And it's weird doing this. And like in my head, I'm like, forget I'm going to let go of it.
All right, guys, I feel like everybody already knows where to find you, but could you give us all of your socials and where people can find you on the internet?
Yeah, so we're the Slow Mo Guys on YouTube and Instagram and stuff, and we just launched a new Patreon.
Yep,
Slow Mo Guys on Patreon as well.
Awesome, congrats.
All right, everybody, go check out the Slow Mo Guys on YouTube, subscribe to their Patreon. Of course, they're all over the socials as well, but That was really fun. I'm so glad you guys are like Mythbuster material. So I'm glad you guys could come by.
Well, thanks for building us that way.
We shall be in touch.
I want to take a minute to talk to parents, because this is something I didn't fully appreciate until recently. Myopia, or nearsightedness, is showing up earlier and earlier in kids. And I've learned it's about more than just seeing clearly in class. If myopia progresses over time without being addressed, it can lead to bigger vision challenges down the road. That's why I'm glad conversations around children's eye health are changing. When you take your child to an eye doctor, you're not just getting a prescription. You're getting insight into how their eyes are developing and what options might help support them in the long term. One of those options is Essilor Stellest lenses. They're designed specifically for kids and used as part of a myopia management approach, all while still correcting everyday vision. And from what I understand, they're worn just like regular glasses, nothing complicated for kids or parents. Every child is different, so the best place to start is with a comprehensive eye exam. For me, it's about being proactive now to help protect their vision for the future. Visit Essilor.com to learn more about Stellest lenses and to find an Essilor expert eye care professional near you. That's Essilor.com.
All right, Tori, we are back, and it is that part of the show where we go check out some fan submissions. People either put questions or comments or whatever they want to communicate to us at mythfitspodcast.com. I get a lot of DMs on Instagram, and I get really excited to get you guys on the show. So we've got a video submission right here. Are you ready, Tori?
What do we got?
This is from Chuck. He said, check this out. I remember you doing this on an episode, and I think you will believe what he sent us. Okay.
Splitting open it up. An arrow. How many times have we retested this one?
This is a guy apparently splitting an arrow with an arrow. But, okay, I'm seeing an arrow end, and I'm seeing an arrow come towards it, but it's almost like arrow inside arrow. Right. These are some new arrows. These aren't the old-timey ones that are just carved from wood. Like, there's a hollowness to it, and it almost looks like one arrow swallows the other arrow. It is a lot closer than we ever got to splitting an arrow, but he is using modern materials here. What do you think?
This is one of those myths that we have tested over and over. Modern materials, you have carbon fiber, you have aluminum arrows that you can get one arrow to go down into the back of another arrow. But what we were testing was from the movie Robin Hood, where it was old-timey wood arrows. Could you split the arrow right down the middle, just like in the movie? And we tested it, I don't know how many times, maybe two or three times, because the fans were like, well, look, this person split an arrow just like this video that you just showed me. Yes,
which is, by the way, amazing. Like the aim, yeah, the target is skill. It is amazing. But I know this is controversial to you guys. It's still not an arrow splitting an arrow. That's what we're looking for. I know it's semantics, but it's not an arrow splitting an arrow. I think it is still busted.
Maybe we need to pull this one out, Carrie, and retest it. I don't know.
Tori, I don't think I can go back to another Ren Faire. Those corsets are really tight. I know you got to wear big, baggy, squire-looking clothes, but I always had to wear a corset. It was very tight. Very tight. It's hard to eat in those things. It's really hard to eat in those things. Do you remember how funny that was to go to, though? Like,
oh, my God. It was like, I've never been to a Ren Faire. I would never go to one just because it's not my thing. But, boy, was that an experience.
People just would not break character. It was so. I'd be like, where's the bathroom? And they're like, pray tell, what is a bathroom? I'm like, pray tell, I'm going to pee my pants. Like, where is the freaking outhouse? Break character for a minute. I can't find it. No shade. You know who loved cosplay? Grant. Grant loved it when we would cosplay.
He was
super into it. He was so
excited.
He didn't
go to that one, though.
I know.
He should have. Was he on the show yet? He might not have been on the show yet. I think it might have been Scotty still. Man.
I don't remember the timing. Scotty loved a good Ren Faire, too, though. She was into it.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, I mean, the people were super duper nice, and I really did. Like, the archery myths were really cool.
Well, thank you, Chuck, for sending that video in. That was definitely an arrow going inside of an arrow, but according to the old timey wood arrows, that was not splitting an arrow.
But a cool high speed. Yeah. All kind of within theme of this show.
Yeah.
Slow-mo guys were freaking cool. I loved those guys.
They're awesome.
They were awesome. I hope we actually do get to do some sort of crossover at some point. So guys,
I think for sure we need to collab with them.
So when you guys, of course, like, subscribe, follow, also leave fan submissions for us. Tell us, what kind of crossover would you like to see with the Mythfits and the Slow-Mo guys? And we'll see if we can get something rolling. But keep submitting those questions. Keep sending us all of the suggestions. We love it when we can bring you onto the show, and we will always end the show like this because we think it is so cool to have the whole Mythfit community here.
Stay weird, Mythfits.
Pioneer.